Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Managing diverticular disease. Diverticular disease, diverticulosis, diverticulitis. What's the difference? Diverticular disease is a disorder of the gastrointestinal tract that primarily affects the colon. Studies have shown that it can affect any part of the gastrointestinal tract, but the colon is the most susceptible. This disorder is characterized by the development of pockets or diverticula within the colon wall. These diverticula tend to develop in the weak areas of the bowel, in particular sites where a large number of blood vessels penetrate the walls of the bowel and in areas that are generally narrower than most others, such as the sigmoid colon. It's believed that the development of diverticula is a result of the adoption of Western diets, which tend to be low in fiber. This is evident in developed or industrialized countries. Due to the large amounts of refining within the food system, the amount of fiber contained in many foods is severely diminished. A diet low in fiber results in the production of stools of a different consistency than normal. This consistency requires more pressure to be present in order to move the stools through the bowel. It's the high pressures that result in the bowel expanding or pocketing outwards through the surrounding muscles, consequently forming the pocket-like structures known as diverticula. Diets high in beef and animal products, as opposed to fruit, veg, and vegetables, are also shown to result in diverticular disease. Animal products contain very little fiber, whereas plants are the main supply for fiber in the diet. If you limit the amount of fruit and vegetables you consume, you limit the amount of fiber in your diet and increase the pressure in your bowels. This puts you in a high-risk category for developing diverticula. Studies have shown that diets high in vegetables, such as those in developing countries, decrease the chance of developing diverticular disease. There may also be a genetic component affecting the development of diverticular disease. This suggests that raised pressure in the bowel may be hereditary. Another factor associated with diverticular disease is age. Diverticular disease is commonly found in individuals over the age of 40. It's estimated that 1/3 of the population at 40 years of age and 2/3 of the population at 80 years of age have diverticular disease. Individuals already suffering from colonic mobility problems or from defects in the strength of the colon wall are also at risk of developing diverticular disease. When sections of the colon don't work effectively, pressure builds up and can lead to the development of diverticula. Generally, the condition does not discriminate by race or gender. It seems to affect people within the same culture. For example, if an Oriental moves to a Western culture and adopts the Western culture and habits in their diet, they become as susceptible to the disease as the rest of the culture. Conversely, if someone from the Western culture moves to an Oriental culture and adopts the culture and eating habits, their chances for developing the disease diminish dramatically. The term diverticula disease is an overall description of the condition and encompasses the two phases of the disease, diverticulosis and diverticulitis. Diverticulosis. This term refers to the presence of diverticula, which are pockets within the colon. A person with diverticulosis may have no symptoms, and it is possible that they may never develop the active phase of the condition. Diverticulitis. This term describes the active phase of the disease in which the diverticula become inflamed. The current belief is diverticulitis occurs when body fluids or fecal matter becomes trapped in the diverticula. This creates the perfect environment for bacteria to grow and cause infection. The infection may proceed in one of four ways. The infection may spontaneously resolve without any medical intervention. Number two, the infection may progress, leading to more serious complications. Number three, the infection may cause partial or complete obstruction of the bowel. This generally must be addressed with surgery. And number four, the infection may fistulize. If the infection is not treated, the site or infection will spread and consequently break through to another organ or cavity of the body, creating a tunnel or fistula. Diverticulitis does not occur in every individual with diverticulosis. Only a small portion of those with diverticulosis will develop diverticulitis. Diverticular disease can be diagnosed in one of several ways. Colonoscopy. This procedure involves a thin, lighted tube being passed through the rectum in order for the doctors to obtain a thorough look at the bowel wall. This also enables the removal of small pieces of the bowel wall for further investigation via biopsy. Number 2, single contrast barium enema. A thin tube is inserted through the rectum in order to feed a white liquid known as barium into the bowel. The presence of the barium allows for the outline of the walls of the bowel to show in an X-ray. If overactivity due to presence of the disease is prevalent, the bowel wall will appear thickened. Number 3, double contrast barium enema. If it's believed that an individual may have diverticular disease, an enema may be implemented to view the wall of the colon. The double contrast enema is more accurate than a single contrast enema. An enema is not used if there is any possibility of diverticulitis, as this may increase the risk of perforation of the diverticula. Number 4, computerized tomography or a CT scan. This procedure is less invasive than the aforementioned because it does not require a tube to be inserted through the rectum. Instead, a scan is used to produce a 3D image on a computer screen where the bowel can be viewed. CT scans are used due to the high degree of accuracy in diagnosing diverticular disease and identifying the development of abscesses. Number 5, water-soluble contrast enema. Another form of enema enables imaging of the intraluminal space and consequent diagnosis of diverticular disease. And number 6, ultrasonography. This test is equally as accurate and non-invasive as a CT scan in diagnosing acute colonic diverticulitis. Ultrasonography involves the use of a skin probe that emits sound waves. These sound waves produce echoes which form a picture of organs and tissues inside the body on an ultrasound machine. For those diagnosed with diverticular disease, many will find that their diverticula will not cause any problems and they'll never develop into the active phase of the disorder. Some may develop this phase once and recover very quickly from the event with treatment through optimal diet and antibiotics. Approximately 10 to 20% of those with diverticulosis will develop to the active phase of the disease. The symptoms of diverticular disease. Many individuals who develop diverticular disease will not display symptoms. In the small percentage of individuals who do show symptoms, the following may occur. Number 1, diarrhea. Diarrhea is characterized by large, frequently watery bowel movements. Constant loss of fluid via diarrhea may lead to dehydration. If this symptom is severe, replenishing of fluids is necessary. It cannot be done at home. The person may require hospitalization. Or increased constipation. Constipation is characterized by failure of the body to eliminate fecal matter, despite the individual feeling the urge to do so. Constipation can result in feeling bloated and lethargic, and in extreme cases may result in toxicity in the body. If constipation remains untreated, it may worsen or cause diverticulitis. Number 2, abdominal pain or cramps. Abdominal pain is the most common symptom of diverticulitis and tends to be a tenderness around the lower left side of the abdomen. This is typically indicative of inflammation of the diverticula due to infection. The severity of the pain is not always indicative of the seriousness of the condition, as a mild condition may result in extreme pain, whereas a serious condition may result in mild pain. The suddenness of the onset of the pain should be used to judge severity of the condition. Abdominal pain caused by diverticulitis tends to be steady, severe, and deep. Number 3, abdominal bloating. This symptom is characterized by feeling of tightness and fullness within the abdominal area and is usually due to the buildup of pressure or gas. Number 4, steatorrhea. This term refers to the presence of excess amounts of fat in the stool due to malabsorption in the gastrointestinal tract. Stools appear to be bulky, light in color, and tend to float in the water. Diarrhea is a common symptom accompanying steatorrhea. Number 5, nausea. Number 6, vomiting. Number 7, fever. It's a condition that's marked by elevated temperatures, sweating, cold, clammy hands, and in some extreme cases, the individual may become delirious. Number 8, excessive flatulence and distension. Excess passing of gas accompanied by bloating around the abdominal area. Number 9, polyuria, dysuria, and pyuria. Polyuria is an increase in the frequency of urination. Dysuria is pain while urinating. And pyuria is the presence of pus or white blood cells in the urine. The urine is cloudy if pus is present. These symptoms occur if the bladder or ureters have been irritated in some way due to the presence of inflamed diverticula. The severity of these symptoms is dependent on the degree of inflammation and the extent of infection of the diverticula. If a person is experiencing any of the aforementioned symptoms, a visit to the doctor would be recommended. Self-diagnosis is not a wise decision, as these symptoms are similar to those of other gastrointestinal disorders. Many doctors will treat these acute symptoms with a course of antibiotics and a liquid diet until the diverticula cease to be inflamed. Complications of diverticular disease. Without the correct treatment, serious cases of diverticular disease can lead to, number one, infection. Infection occurs when bodily fluids or feces become trapped in the diverticula and begin to stagnate. This provides an optimal environment for the growth of bacteria and consequently the development of an infection. Number two, rectal bleeding. Bleeding from the rectum can occur if diverticula present in the colon begin to bleed due to bursting of blood vessels. Rectal bleeding will present itself in one of two ways. A, small amounts of blood will be present in the stool over a few days. This generally rectifies itself. Or B, a large amount of blood is produced over a small amount of time due to the bursting of blood vessels. The onset of this type of bleeding is generally painless, immediate, and accompanied by an urge to defecate. This symptom is usually only present in those with extreme cases of diverticulitis and requires hospitalization and possible surgery. Alternatively, the implementation of a device up through the rectum to cauterize the bleeding wound shut. In some cases, the bleeding may stop spontaneously without the requirement of medical intervention. 3. Hemorrhage. The presence of rectal bleeding or bloody stools is generally indicative of internal bleeding or hemorrhage. Internal hemorrhaging will present itself as red or burgundy-colored stools. Number 4. Fistulas. A fistula is an abnormal tunnel or connection between two organs that develops as a result of an infection. In the case of diverticulitis, this infection is present with the inflamed diverticula. There are many areas where fistulas can occur. The main areas affected by diverticular disease are the areas surrounding the bowel and genitals and the anus. Fistulas may link the surrounding organs or cavities to the bowel. The most common occurrences in individuals with gastrointestinal are as follows. A. Enterocutaneous, a pathway leading from the gut to the area of the infection and finally to the skin. B. Enteroentric, any fistula involving the intestines. C. Enterovaginal, a fistula creating a pathway to the vagina. Symptoms of this fistula include vaginal discharge containing fecal matter. Feculent vaginal discharge can also be the result of a fistula developing between the site of infection and the uterus. D. Enterovascular, a fistula creating a pathway from the site of infection to the bladder. Symptoms of the development of this type of fistula include frequent urinary tract infections, pneumaturia, and the passing of gas from the urethra during urination. In diverticular disease, the resulting fistulas are generally fecal or anal fistulas, meaning the fistula may cause feces to pass through openings other than the anus. Fistulas are formed from abscesses which do not have a chance of healing due to being constantly filled with bodily fluids or stools. If the abscesses remain untreated, they will consequently break through to the skin or another organ, creating a tunnel or connection between the two structures. The types of fistulas that may develop include blind fistulas, where only one end of the fistula has an opening, B, complete fistula, both ends of the fistula are open, C, a horseshoe fistula, where the anus is connected to the surface of the skin via a tunnel around the rectum, D, incomplete fistula, is only attached to one organ, generally the skin. Symptoms of a fistula include pain, feeling ill, fever, tenderness, or itching, and severity will range depending on the location of the fistula itself. 5. Large bowel obstruction. This complication only occurs in a small number of individuals suffering from diverticulitis. As a result of the swelling due to inflammation, scar tissue develops. Blockage due to inflammation will settle as the inflammation is treated. However, blockage due to scar tissue remains. These blockages can occur as partial or total blockages. Partial blockages are not urgent and therefore corrective surgery can be planned. Total blockages are urgent and must be addressed via surgery immediately. Number 6, development of an abscess. These are pus-filled areas of infection and may form if initial infection remains untreated. Due to the destruction of tissue by an abscess, small holes, known as perforations, allow the leakage of pus out of the colon into the abdominal area. Perforations may cause the individual to develop pain in the back or lower extremities. While small abscesses may rectify themselves without antibiotics, large abscesses may have to be drained. Abscesses are drained by inserting a catheter. If drainage is not successful, surgery may be required to clean the abscesses. If excessive amounts of infection leak out of the contaminated area into the abdominal cavity, peritonitis may occur. In this case, the individual will be experiencing severe generalized abdominal pain. Peritonitis refers to the infection of the walls of the abdomen that requires immediate surgery to clean the abdomen. Peritonitis can be fatal without treatment. Treatment involves an operation to clean the abdomen and infected parts of the colon are removed. Dietary management of diverticular disease. All current literature recommends that the most effective way to prevent or manage diverticulosis is a high-fiber diet. Fiber is the indigestible portion of plant foods, which aids in bulking up the stool to assist it in passing through the body to ensure regular bowel movements. There are two types of fiber in the diet, soluble and insoluble. Both aid in the creation of a stool and prevent constipation. Number 1 is soluble fiber. Dissolves easily in water and takes on a soft texture in the intestines. This fiber is the body's main means of bulking the stool. Number 2 is insoluble fiber, which passes through the gastrointestinal tract virtually unchanged. As the plant materials are passed through the body, the removal of water, protein, fats, carbohydrates, and essential nutrients occurs. Upon entering the colon, all that remains to be digested is water. The colon should remove this remaining water, thus forming a stool. If any individual is not eating sufficient amounts of food containing fiber, a very dry, hard stool is produced. Stools of this consistency have difficulty moving through the bowel and require higher amounts of pressure to be passed through. Gradually, the body becomes incapable of creating these high amounts of pressure and begins to rely on the force of the movement of the abdominal walls to transport the stool through the bowel. This is known as straining and puts an excessive amount of pressure on the abdominal wall, resulting in the formation of aggravation or diverticula. On the other hand, diets containing sufficient amounts of fiber end in the production of a softer, bulkier stool, which is easily moved through the bowel without requiring high pressures. Current recommendations for fiber intake on a daily basis are: number 1, at least 25 grams of fiber per day for adult women; number 2, at least 30 grams of fiber per day for adult men; number 3, 28 grams of fiber per day for pregnant women over the age of 18; and number 4, 27 to 30 grams of fiber per day for women who are breastfeeding. Another requirement for the formulation of a soft, bulky stool is an adequate fluid intake. This will ensure that the stool retains sufficient water to be soft and the bowel is able to produce mucus. The secretion of mucus allows the stool to pass easily through the bowel rather than sticking to the wall of the colon. Drink plenty of fluids each day. Aim for 2 liters, which is about 8 standard drinking glasses, to ensure sufficient fluid in the body for bulky, soft stools. Be aware that the term fluid does not just apply to water. Many items constitute a fluid. These include water, milk, juice, sport drinks, tea, coffee, soft drinks, ice cream, custard, and soup. Previously, many doctors recommended the avoidance of nuts, popcorn, pumpkin, caraway seeds, and sunflower seeds, as they believed they may become stuck in the diverticula and cause infection and inflammation. These recommendations have since been discontinued, as there is no scientific evidence that these foods have any effect. Foods high in fiber include pears, apples, bananas, dried fruit, peas, potatoes with the skin, broccoli, cabbage, spinach, asparagus, squash, carrots, baked beans, lentils, chickpeas, kidney beans, lima beans, whole grain or whole meal bread, whole wheat pasta, breakfast cereals containing barley, wheat, and oats, dried beans, soy milk, psyllium, and brown rice. It may be tempting to include a fiber supplement in your diet, but try to avoid this if possible because it may cause diarrhea if you're not drinking sufficient fluids. Aim to consume all your fiber requirements by eating a healthy diet. dietary management of diverticulitis. The treatment of diverticulitis is the opposite of diverticulosis. During the inflamed stage of the disease, care should be taken to limit fiber in the diet to avoid further upset or inflammation and to allow the bowel time to rest. In many cases, the fluid diet may be prescribed to ease the burden on the bowel during times of inflammation. Decreasing fiber in the diet during this stage of the disorder aids in limiting the substances passing through the inflamed section. The individual is required to continue on a low-fiber diet for a month. If the symptoms have stopped, the person can resume on a high-fiber diet. Previous studies have revealed that in some cases, those suffering from a colonic disease such as diverticulitis may also suffer from lactose malabsorption. This means that the body is unable to absorb lactose from foods or fluids. Lactose is a form of sugar present in milk and other dairy products. In the event that the body is unable to absorb lactose, the individual may suffer from diarrhea, abdominal pain, and abdominal bloating after eating dairy products. For this reason, it may be necessary for an individual to select lactose-free dairy products while diverticulitis persists. Once the condition has been appropriately treated and subsides, the individual should be able to resume eating and drinking dairy products. Studies have shown that lactose malabsorption subsides once diverticulitis has been treated. Very few studies have been done in the area of lactose malabsorption resulting from colonic disease, so current evidence is still slightly controversial. If you're suffering from any of the aforementioned symptoms of lactose malabsorption, contact your doctor. Tips for optimizing your diet to manage diverticulitis and relieve symptoms. As mentioned in the previous chapter, adopting a diet low in fiber during the onset and duration of diverticulitis will aid in managing and alleviating any symptoms that may occur. The following tips may be useful in decreasing fiber in your diet. Number one, consume white breads and cereals. During the process of refining, foods tend to lose much of their fiber content. Breads and cereals based on white flour are particularly low in fiber and are the optimal choice for someone suffering from diverticulitis. Number two, limit, but do not completely eliminate, the amount of fruit and vegetables you eat. Fiber is mainly obtained from these types of foods, so it makes sense to limit these in your diet for the duration of your diverticulitis. Number three, most of the fiber in fruit and vegetables is in the skin, so peel your fruit and vegetables before you eat them. Number four, avoid seeds, nuts, popcorn, and legumes, as they may further irritate the condition. Foods that are low in fiber include white breads and cereals, skinless fruits and vegetables, fruit juice, vegetable juice, and meat and other dairy products. Number five, in some individuals, it may be necessary to select lactose-free dairy products. If lactose malabsorption is present, appropriate dairy products that are low in lactose include soy milk, most cheeses, lactose-free milk, and lactose-free yogurt. Summary. This publication is a great starting point to recognize the symptoms of diverticulosis and diverticulitis, but to be properly diagnosed, you need to visit your doctor. As you note in the reading, the treatment for each phase of the disease is directly opposite, so self-diagnosing the disease could lead to eating the wrong foods and making the disease worse. As always, check with your doctor first before deciding on which path to take.